Welcome to Speaking of Health with Dr. Michael Cudlis. There are several new innovations being explored and applied in the different levels of consciousness, be it in the physical, emotional, mental, and/or spiritual realm. We will explain and compare these new healing elements to help improve the quality of life for you and your loved ones. Now, here is Dr. Michael Cudlis.
Welcome. Glad to hear you all out there. This is Dr. Michael Cudlis. Speaking of Health is my show. You can contact me at kcc.net. That's my website. And we've got a great show today. We speak about health, all things health. So when you think about it, a lot of that is just about everything that happens to us. Of course, our physical health, emotional, mental, unconscious, spiritual health, all of those are important. But it doesn't matter how well we take care of ourselves unless we are in an environment that's healthy too. So environmental health is extremely important. What are we talking about there? Well, we're talking about clean air, clean water, the opportunity to have those things on a regular basis. And it seems since the 1970s that those things have been under attack, that our air gets dirtier, our water gets more polluted, because the standards that the government holds are being relaxed more and more and more. And there are many things that are being dumped in our water that aren't even being tested for. A large number of those are pharmaceuticals. And, of course, they're having an influence on the environment. If, indeed, we are responsible for our future generations, we need to be paying attention to that now. And I'm not so sure we are, you know. Oh, it's probably 10 years ago in Michigan, one of the larger counties, Wayne County, more developed county, where Detroit, Michigan sits, the farmers in the outlying areas of the counties were finding that their wells were being polluted with arsenic and unusable. And it was this big mystery. Like, why is this happening? And public health wasn't sure. And then all you had to do was look back in the history books. These wells were about 50, 60 feet deep that were being polluted. And you looked 50, 60 years earlier, what were they putting on the fields as an herbicide? They were putting arsenic on the fields. Well, that didn't break down when it got into the dirt. In fact, it quietly, year by year by year, leached down through the soil until it hit the water table. And then it came right back up. So we have a responsibility, not to just what we're doing now, and we have those knuckleheads out there that claim to be stewards of the planet and figure that they can rape and pillage this planet left and right now for their own greed and avarice, and claim that we're doing God's work. Well, I'm not quite sure what their God is, but it doesn't seem to be a responsible action on our part. And when you look at the government, you find they're changing standards. In fact, you look at our government, and they just recently opened because of some knuckleheads that are in there, kind of goofing around with our government, not paying attention to being responsible, and in fact doing perhaps even treasonous activities, trying to shut our government down. So I'm not sure that we have the greatest responsibility, the greatest people in responsibility caring for us at this time. Just remember that on election day, because if we voted them in, we can sure as heck vote them out. And so I thought it would be really good to have a show on environmental health. And because when you think about it, what is responsibility for our health care? Well, we have to have good energy in our bodies, but also energy drives our environment. And what is the main source of energy that we have now? It happens to be oil. And nothing gets done without energy. Everything that happens in our society, the growing of food, the mining of minerals, the manufacture of goods, the transports of good and people, heating and cooling of buildings, All this requires energy expenditures. And the services rendered by our healthcare field also requires enormous amounts of energy. It's a really energy-intensive healthcare system. Look at our hospitals. They're all Taj Mahals. Highly engineered pharmaceuticals. The energy required to make that is phenomenal. Vast armies of nurses, technicians, doctors, insurance clerks, case managers. I mean, all of these things go into making up our healthcare system. And, you know, in America, our healthcare system's busted. I mean, it's badly damaged, and yet it's extraordinarily energy intensive. So the high cost of energy has been partially responsible for the sluggish world economy, which in turn has meant lower tax revenues, which in turn has led to cuts in public health programs that monitor disease outbreaks and work to limit them. The high cost of all of those things really create a problem for us. So what do we do with that? I mean, the high cost of energy inputs in part are responsible for the high and rising costs in healthcare. So how do we respond to these developments? What is it that we can do to be responsible so that we can have a better healthcare system and a better environmental health system? So our guest here today is a real expert in this. His name is Kurt Cobb. He's an energy expert, particularly in the field of oil and peak oil. We're going to talk about what is peak oil, because if you're thinking our oil revenues are peaking, now you need to look behind you, because it was a few years ago that our oil energy reserves peaked. And he's an author of a really good novel called Prelude. And I really encourage you to get this. If you haven't gotten it, you need to get it and read it. It's a wonderful book, and we're going to tell you where you can get that today, too. So, Kurt, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Good. Glad to hear your voice today. I hope everything's going well with you.
Yes, indeed.
And Kurt just recently moved, ladies and gentlemen, so I don't know. I'd rather slam my head in a sliding glass door 7 or 8 times than I would try to move. So did everything land okay?
Yeah, it's been a real adventure. I'm out here in Portland, Oregon, and we're going to talk about energy today. And Portland and Oregon, they're really on the cutting edge of energy developments. And so this is one of the reasons I want to be out here, but I know you have other things you want to talk about, so I'll let you go ahead and ask some questions.
Well, look, we're talking about environmental energy, and if somebody's on the peak, leading, cutting edge, and it happens to be a city or a state or an area, if you went out there because of that, give us some information about what you've experienced out there, and we'll go from there.
Well, a lot of people know that in the Pacific Northwest, a lot of the electricity comes from hydropower. And so people here are very focused on clean energy. In fact, the governor here has outlined a 10-year plan that requires the state to get all of its extra, you know, growth in electrical energy use from either renewables or conservation. And people out here are very big on conservation. How can we use less energy to get all the services and goods that we want? And frankly, that's where we need to go. That's one of the reasons that I wanted to move here and be part of what's going on here in Oregon and in the Pacific Northwest, is that people are thinking about the future in a way that makes sense. How can we get the things that we want using a lot less energy? I think that ultimately that's where we need to go. And right now you hear a lot of discussion about America becoming energy independent and growing world oil supplies, and this all needs to be tempered with the facts. And the facts are that oil supply growth has slowed to a crawl, and the energy sources that we use are finite, and they also, as you pointed out earlier, are the cause of many of the problems, health problems that we're having. I mean, the emissions from coal-fired power plants, the emissions from automobiles and transportation, These are all pollute our air, and in certain processes also pollute our water. And so this kind of energy system is not only sustainable because the supplies are finite, but also because of the environmental damage and the damage to our health.
So, well, no.
Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, wait a second. We're hearing all this stuff about clean coal and natural gas, and, you know, we've got hundreds of years now because of these things. But isn't, I mean, when I grew up as a kid, and this will give you an idea how old I was, we had a coal-fired furnace, and it was a gravity-feed coal-fired furnace. And that was pretty dirty stuff, as I recall. It was like, don't go near the coal bin. Now, is there such a thing as clean coal, or is that indeed just an oxymoron?
Well, I think it's really a marketing tool. The coal industry has been on the defensive for years because coal is the dirtiest of the fossil fuels, and we've been trying to, actually, in this country, we've been trying to shut down coal-fired power plants because they are so polluting. So the industry, in order to save itself, decided that they could invent something called clean coal. Now, clean coal can mean two different things. Usually what it actually means is they want to take the pollutants or the toxins out of coal. We don't know this, and most people don't know this, and that is coal has a lot of other things other than coal in it. It has sulfur in it, which has caused a problem with acid rain. Sulfur got into the air. It gets turned into sulfuric acid, and then it rains down on our forests and on our buildings. And we did a lot to solve that problem many years ago, and we've just have new regulations in to have the industry take mercury, which is also something else that occurs naturally in coal, out of the coal so that it doesn't get into the air and then go into the water and get into our fish, for example. So clean coal really means taking those impurities out. And there's another thing that they've been talking about, and that is to capture the carbon dioxide that comes from the burning of coal. And we use a lot of coal to generate electricity. We don't use it to heat so much anymore. So they want to take this carbon dioxide and somehow sequester it. That's an interesting word since we've been talking about sequestration at the federal level. But this means to actually take some of it and put it underground in caverns so that it doesn't get into the atmosphere and cause climate change. Trouble is, people have been trying to do this for years, and they have found that it's difficult to do, expensive to do, and there isn't really that much storage. So underground, we don't have the caverns that could store 8 billion tons of carbon dioxide every year worldwide. So this is why they've come up with the idea of clean coal. It's not a workable concept, and I agree with you. It is an oxymoron.
Okay, so let's take a break, and when we come back, let's explore this just a little bit further in terms of society's responsibility, governmental responsibility, and our personal responsibilities so that we can have a society where our health is a little bit better. This is Dr. Michael Cudlis, and we're on Speaking of Health. We'll be right back.
A fresh look at today's health. Voice America Health and Wellness.
Speaking of Health is brought to you by Old Time Medicinals Essential Oil Formulas. Remedies from yesterday to help you heal today. Have aches, pain, muscle soreness, inflamed joints, or stiffness cut into the joy of your life? Have you been denied the health, wealth, and happiness you deserve? Old Time Medicinals has life-changing products to help you help yourself to a pain-free existence. For more information, email us at oldtimemedicinals@gmail.com. Get your life back now. Email oldtimemedicinals@gmail.com.
Have you ever noticed that modern medicine tends to treat symptoms rather than causes? As a result, people rarely experience true healing or a transformation from which the body emerges healthy, vibrant, and alive. On Healing From Within with John Robson, learn to harness the synergistic healing power of your body and mind while discovering and dissolving the actual causes of your emotional and physical pain. Tune in and start healing from within every Wednesday at 9 a.m. Pacific Time, noon Eastern Time on Voice America Health and Wellness.
Think of the world
50 years ago.
Now think of this same world and how it'll be
50 years from now.
Did you know that if the world's population continues to grow at its current rate, our children and grandchildren will only have 25% of the resources per capita that our parents and grandparents had? We must preserve the foundation of a quality standard of living. That foundation starts with Go Green Radio. Join your host, Jill Buck, for Go Green Radio every Friday at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Voice America.
Opinions, options, answers. Voice America Health and Wellness.
You are tuned in to Speaking of Health with Dr. Michael Cudlis. To reach Dr. Cudlis or his guest today, please call 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. You may also send an email to drmcudlis@gmail.com. Now, back to Speaking of Health.
Hi, welcome back. Dr. Michael Cudlis here, Speaking of Health, and we're speaking with Kurt Cobb, oil expert, author, and you can read some of his blogging material where, Kurt?
It's at a blog called Resource Insights. If you just Google that, those two words, you'll get the blog. It's now being picked up by the Christian Science Monitor in its Energy Voices section. So if you're a reader of the Christian Science Monitor, you'll see me there on a fairly regular basis and many other places across the web.
Okay. We want to make sure we let people know just how much of an expert you really are. So we're talking about this different energy stuff. And what is this, like, this tar, coal tar, not coal tar, but tar sands. Is that the same as the tar that Jed Clampett got when he shot and missed his rabbit and bullet hole opened up his oil riches on his backwards country farm?
Well, now you're dating us both. The Beverly
yeah.
Hills.
Oh, you,
you, for a while.
You remember him. Okay.
I do think that's an apt comparison. We have been living in this global society of ours on what I call the Beverly Hillbillies oil, and that is this bubbling crude, this what's called light sweet crude, and it flows. It's in liquid form under the earth. That's what we're used to thinking of as oil. But now that type of oil has peaked. Not all oil, but that light sweet crude, that easy to get flowing oil has peaked worldwide and is starting to decline. So we're substituting this unconventional oil, and some of it is tar sands. And tar sands are actually just bits of sand with not oil, but a sort of tarry substance called bitumen, which is used in asphalt. And then we have to transform that gooey stuff, very, very thick and gooey, into what we call oil, something that flows. And it requires a lot of energy just to do it. We actually take clean natural gas. Now, get a load of this. We take natural gas, which is fairly clean, and we use it to make this dirty oil into something that we can use in our gasoline tanks. So that's what's happening. It's much more energy intensive. It produces a lot more carbon dioxide, and it uses a cleaner fuel source, natural gas, to make it because the whole world is so hooked on oil. We use oil for all kinds of things, primarily in our transportation and agriculture. Without it, we wouldn't be able to get where we want to go, transfer goods where we want to, and we wouldn't be able to feed the world without it. So it's so crucial that we're willing to take a cleaner fuel like natural gas and make dirtier fuels into something we can use. So that's the sort of irony of the tar sands.
Do we come up with a plus on that? I mean, I've read, I think, somewhere where they say it takes more energy to produce energy from the tar sands. It takes more energy than we end up with at the end of the processing cycle. Is that true?
Well, I think you're thinking of something like ethanol, where you can, there are several studies that demonstrate that ethanol, and people remember the ethanol boom, and that's sort of receded as it becomes apparent that you're not getting as much energy out as you put in, and the economics of it turn out to be about the same. A lot of the ethanol operations that grew up in the last decade have now disappeared because you can't really make that much money on it. Not impossible if you have the right setup, but very difficult. So there are some things that we think are energy sources that actually absorb more energy than they give us. Tar sands is not one of those, but let me give you a comparison. Some people have tried to figure this out, and that is we get about 5 units of energy for every unit we put into the tar sands, and that sounds really, really good. Well, that should be okay, except that we're running the world now on light sweet crude, which gives us about 20 units of energy for every one that we put in. And frankly, I don't see how we could run the world on the tar sands. We're not designed. Our infrastructure is designed for that 20-to-1 ratio. And this is one of the reasons that our economy is slowing down, is that we're now using energy resources that are much more expensive and give us a much lower energy return. And that bodes ill for the future.
So does that mean if we're going from 20-to-1 to 5-to-1, the price of the oil should go up 4 times what it is now?
Well, remember that the supplies that we're getting now are the sort of blend of light sweet crude and this unconventional crude that we're getting from Canada and other places. So it won't necessarily be reflected in a fourfold price increase. But keep in mind that let me take that back. Because oil reached a low in 1998 of about $10 a barrel, and we're now trading at about $100 a barrel. So the difficulty of getting this new oil out and the squeeze in supply has actually increased the price of oil tenfold.
Wow.
So in some ways, we've already seen that happen. The marginal barrel of oil is costing us a lot more, and because oil is so valuable, people are willing to pay a lot for it.
Uh-huh. So we really, that's one of the reasons we see these fluctuations in our gasoline prices?
Well, fluctuations in gasoline prices from week to week depend on, local supplies and demand. And but I think what people are seeing in general over the last few years is very high volatility in the oil market. And that's usually a sign that in any system, when you see high volatility, it means you're near the limits of that system. What can that system do? And if you're showing high volatility, it tends to be near its limit. And in the last 7 or 8 years, we've increased oil production worldwide by about 2.7%. Now, that sounds like it might be okay, except that we were increasing it from about 1990 to 2005 by about 1.5% each year. So you can see how much the increase has slowed down. And then, China and India bidding on this oil because their economies are growing, it's really pushed the price up. So we're in a supply squeeze versus demand, and supply is increasing at a much slower rate, which is reflective of how much harder it is to get the oil, which we're now getting out of places like the tar sands, how much harder it is to get that and how much slower it flows. So flow rates are actually the thing that people should focus on. You hear a lot about, we've just discovered a huge amount of oil here or a huge amount of oil there, and that doesn't matter as much as the rate of flow. How much are we getting out today and tomorrow and the next day? Because that's what makes the world economy go. Let me say one more thing in that regard, and that is if you hear that we've discovered a billion barrels of oil in this field or a couple billion over there in that field, that sounds like a lot. But actually it turns out that a billion barrels of oil will last the global economy for 13 days. Don't be bamboozled. It shows you how much we're consuming. You discover a lot, but if you're consuming a lot at this huge, colossal rate, it's not going to last you very long.
Now, to bring that down to earth, and by that I mean to bring it like into each one of our homes, they always say think global, but practice local or vote local or something like that, because that's where we are on a local basis. When we come back, can you go over some of the things that the average Joe like you and me can do in our homes to save some of this oil, not necessarily cutting our quality of life, but certainly cutting the expense and the threat that we're putting on the world by all this energy glut?
Sure, we'll do that.
Okay, cool. So, ladies and gentlemen, we'll be right back. Speaking of health, Dr. Michael Cudlis, and we're with our great author here, Kurt Cobb. We'll be right back.
Helping you make informed decisions for your life. This is Voice America Health and Wellness.
Speaking of Health is brought to you by Old Time Medicinals Essential Oil Formulas. Remedies from yesterday to help you heal today. Have aches, pain, muscle soreness, inflamed joints, or stiffness cut into the joy of your life? Have you been denied the health, wealth, and happiness you deserve? Old Time Medicinals has life-changing products to help you help yourself to a pain-free existence. For more information, email us at oldtimemedicinals@gmail.com. Get your life back now. Email oldtimemedicinals@gmail.com. Are you stuck, feeling frustrated or overwhelmed? Do you keep putting off your dreams until tomorrow? Is your to-do list growing while time keeps shrinking? Are your closets and cupboards crammed but your life still feels empty? Join Soul Coach and Vitality Expert Amy Dufresne each week for Vital Lessons, Feeding Your Body, Mind, and Soul. Amy and her expert guests will help you to clear out the clutter and inject more joy into your life. Be inspired to keep going and create the life you crave. Listen Wednesdays at 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 11 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel.
Opinions, options, answers. Voice America Health and Wellness.
You are tuned in to Speaking of Health with Dr. Michael Cudlis. To reach Dr. Cudlis or his guest today, please call 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. You may also send an email to drmcudlisspeakingofhealth@gmail.com. Now, back to Speaking of Health.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. We're talking with Kurt Cobb, author of the book Prelude, and we're talking about peak oil, environmental health, environmental energies. And Kirk, what are some of the things that people can do to help the world and cut down on energy costs at home?
Well, I think one of the things that will be helpful to people if they want to become more resilient in an energy-constrained society is to lower the amount of or reduce the amount of energy that they use. And that sounds like that's going to be a negative, but of course there are cost savings if you do that, and there's a colossal amount of energy that we waste at home just because our homes are drafty. You know, there's the weatherization of your homes. You can seal up your windows. You can put in extra insulation. You can turn down the water heater. There's all kinds of suggestions. You can just do something as simple as making sure you turn off the lights. These are just habits that once you develop them, you realize, boy, that's not that hard, and you're using a lot of energy, and your quality of life isn't lowered. Now, there's the next step, which is to do something to change your transportation habits. We tend to just, in America especially, get into the car whenever we want to go anywhere. And I like to ride a bicycle, and here in Portland, there's lots of opportunities to do that, to get your daily errands done on a bicycle, and that's surprisingly efficient. And also, I would say here, your quality of life goes up because you tend to lose weight and feel a little more fit and get some fresh air on a regular basis. So there are things that we can do that will actually enhance our lives. And I feel that I've actually enhanced my life by using less energy, because some of the ways in which we use energy, like driving around a lot, are actually pretty stressful and hard on us, as well as the environment. So let me stop there, because there are so many things we could talk about in the home. But I think you'll find on the web, if you wanted to, you're interested in more ways in which you can save energy and also, I think, simultaneously improve your life. There's lots of suggestions available there.
And that's interesting, because it what you're really talking about is going to the simpler life, not being tied up in the frantic, got to get this done, got to get that done, got to multitask, got to multitask. Just the simpler life. And slowing things down a little bit seems to make it a whole lot more healthy. If you're out on a bicycle, you're going to be a whole lot healthier within a relatively short amount of time, just pedaling around. Plus, you get to slow down, pay attention to your neighborhood, see your neighbors, maybe meet your neighbors. Overall, this is a sense of building community as well, which is extraordinarily important for healthcare. So say we go ahead and we do these things and we take care of our houses and take care of ourselves in the process. Well, what do cities and counties do? How do they start saving?
Well, actually, I think the leaders in energy conservation now are the states and the cities. The federal government in the United States, at least, has been rather more abundant and gridlocked on these issues. So there are, actually, people should know that there are programs usually available in most states and in some cases through your municipal government to help you pay for the things that will make your home more efficient, to help you weatherize your home, to help you put in solar panels. There are all kinds of credits and incentives available. So from that standpoint, it's worth it to get on the web and see what your state or your county or your municipality has to offer. In a broader sense, I can say here in Portland, another reason why I've decided this is the place I want to live is they have an excellent public transportation system. We have streetcars as well as buses and also a light rail system that can get you from one end of the city to the other in a relatively short period of time. So where you can advocate for that in your city or where you can help expand it in your city, that's a way that we can save energy. And I frankly find it much less stressful to take a ride on the streetcar downtown than I do to drive downtown. So there is another way in which your quality of life can actually go up when you get out of your car and find some other way to get to where you want to go.
Yeah, I remember going to Chicago, and of course I drove down there, and we were going to a special restaurant, and when we went in, it cost me more to park my car than it did for the meal. I mean, I found that to be extraordinarily stressful, and so we've talked about from now on just taking the train into Chicago. It's a very nice ride from Kalamazoo. And very inexpensive, and taxi around or walk around. And but the idea that I paid more for parking than I did for two people to eat, that kind of set me off a little bit. I thought this is not a place I would want to live. And go ahead.
Up, Michael, a lot of people are making the choice to get rid of their cars. I confess that I still have mine because I have to service clients that I have to drive to, but I try to, stay on foot or on public transportation or on my bike as much as possible. Fewer and fewer young people are actually getting driver's licenses and driving. They've figured out what you figured out.
Yeah, I mean, it was just amazing. And, you pay rent if you live in Chicago. I have friends there, and they pay rent for their apartment. And they almost pay an equal amount if they want a parking space. It's astonishing the cost of those sorts of things. And of course, being a homeowner, I have a driveway. I don't pay much attention to that. But and there are times, I agree, when the car is necessary. But a lot of times we've just taken the easy way out, I think, and taken the car because we're in a hurry to get somewhere. And we could have walked, had a 20-minute walk instead of a 3-minute car ride. and it would have been healthier for us. We would have get to see more of our neighborhood, see more of our neighbors, build a little more community. I think that might be the better way to go in the future. Completely safe, energy safe, and just a better way to go about doing things. Well, how does this impact healthcare now? You know, this the high cost, the rising cost of oil and energy expenditures, how does that influence us in the healthcare field?
Well, of course, rising energy costs impact all of society. But because the healthcare system that we have in the United States and also in Canada and Europe, similar systems, not the way we pay for it, but the way we deliver it, is very energy intensive. It uses a lot of energy just to run the hospitals and clinics. There's a lot of people there, so we need energy to, you know, have their, you know, run their lives so that they can have homes and they can have jobs. And so there's just a lot of inputs into a hospital. And, of course, that forces them to charge us more money for all the services they provide. And, of course, in the United States in particular, affordability has become a problem. So as it becomes more expensive to seek medical treatment, people are, have been able to do it. And this has, of course, led to a lot of people being uninsured. Now, as of January 1st, we have a new health insurance system in the United States, which is supposed to be insuring a lot more people, get us near 100%. But I don't think that's going to solve the healthcare cost problem necessarily, or the affordability problem for a lot of people. They may be able to be insured, but it's going to cost them a lot to do so. So I would say that that's one area that I'm concerned about. Another area that I'm concerned about is public health, and that's an area where the government expenditures are the main driver of public health. And with governments running huge deficits and having financial and fiscal problems, it's hard to see that as we go forward, the governments are going to be spending more on public health measures. Now, you know, public health measures can be as simple as sewer in your hometown and the water system. Those are public health measures. Those are instituted because we wanted to avoid making people sick from contaminated water.
Yeah.
I mean, those are key things that have led to the increased longevity and better health for people worldwide, just simple systems like that. That's really a public health measure. To the extent that we don't fund those well and properly, that's going to have an impact on our health. But there's also all the programs to deal with people who are indigent, people who have special needs. There are, of course, programs like the Centers for Disease Control that monitor outbreaks of possible epidemics and try to coordinate treatment. These are things that I think are just crucial to the overall health of our global society, and they're getting underfunded. And so that makes me fear for the future when we have an outbreak of a very dangerous epidemic. And we will have one. No scientist disputes this. At some point, it'll happen. Last time we had something like that was in 1918. It killed 3% of the population of the world. That doesn't sound like much, but it was chaos.
Yeah, there were millions.
Yeah, it was just it was tremendously bad for about 18 months. What people call it was influenza. It was what people called the Spanish flu, and it killed a lot of people in World War One. A lot of combatants who were in the trenches, they got it. So it's a matter of time before we have something like that in our case, we don't know how bad it's going to be, but I do know that if the public health systems are not well-funded and monitoring this and trying to contain it on a regular basis, that we will be in for a very difficult time. So that's an indirect way in which high energy prices impact society, because we're going to have to be making choices about what do we want to spend public revenues on as it becomes more and more difficult to fund government, because when you have high energy costs, that takes money away from other things that we want to do. You know, the energy industry supplies energy to the rest of us. Right now in the United States, it's 2.5% of the economy. We think it's a lot bigger, but it's actually quite small. when that share of the pie becomes 5% or 7% or 10%, that means a lot of our economy is going to have to be devoted to just getting energy versus all the other things that we want to do, so including healthcare and public health and driving our cars and whatever it is. That means it'll become increasingly expensive, and we'll have less energy and therefore money available to do all the other things. So we are going to have to carefully calibrate our priorities, and I think public health needs to be a big one.
Boy, I hope that that's shared. And just as we're coming up to a break here, I want to mention back when they had that Spanish flu outbreak, the people that were under homeopathic care lived. The people that were under medical care died. So the large number of people that died largely, they died because they received medical treatment at the time, not homeopathic treatment. So keep that in mind, ladies and gentlemen. There are other ways to be treated than just running to your emergency room. We're going to be right back, Dr. Michael Cudlis, speaking of health, with Mr. Kurt Cobb.
Step into a healthier you. Voice America Health and Wellness.
Speaking of health is brought to you by Old Time Medicinals Essential Oil Formulas. Remedies from yesterday to help you heal today. Have aches, pain, muscle soreness, inflamed joints, or stiffness cut into the joy of your life? Have you been denied the health, wealth, and happiness you deserve? Old Time Medicinals has life-changing products to help you help yourself to a pain-free existence. For more information, email us at oldtimemedicinals@gmail.com. Get your life back now. Email oldtimemedicinals@gmail.com.
9 different energy systems make up the energy body. Energy is all around us and connects us. Energy exerts a major control over our biology and is a big reason why you should be tuning in to Energy Medicine and Optimal Health with your host, Dr. Ann Deatley. We'll explore energy balance techniques, tips, and patterns to keep your flow of energy optimal to maintain maximal health. By adopting these techniques, you will keep your energy body and physical body in harmony. Listen for Energy Medicine and Optimal Health, Mondays at 7 p.m. Eastern Time, 4 p.m. Pacific Time, on Voice America Health and Wellness.
Opinions, options, answers. Voice America Health and Wellness.
You are tuned in to Speaking of Health with Dr. Michael Cudlis. To reach Dr. Cudlis or his guest today, please call 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. You may also send an email to drmcudlisspeakingofhealth@gmail.com. Now, back to Speaking of Health.
Hi, welcome back. Dr. Michael Cudlis here, speaking of health with Kurt Cobb. And Kurt, with energy expenditures rising like this, and your local Taj Mahal Hospital, really, which just tremendous energy drainers, there are other forms of healthcare that you're aware of that are much more energy efficient. Can you speak to those?
Sure. Now, I use I see a chiropractor, I see an acupuncturist, and when you think about these healthcare practitioners, they don't require a huge amount of equipment or a huge facility to practice in. They basically, you know, with a chiropractor, his hands and a table. Of course, there are herbalists that requires a little bit more energy, but you can grow herbs in your backyard practically. So, and these are much less energy intensive to, herbal preparations are much less energy intensive to create because they use the natural plants. And my acupuncturist, he needs somebody who knows how to make needles. They've been making those for 5,000 years. So, and then he needs to stick them in with his hands. So,
yeah.
These are actually low impact, low energy practices that can be very effective. I know in my case, one of the things that has deviled me for years were environmental and food allergies. And with a combination of chiropractic treatment and acupuncture treatment, I've been able to get rid of almost all of those. So in some cases, this lower energy treatment actually can be more effective, or at least can be effective in areas that modern medicine has trouble treating. So if you want to be more resilient in an energy constrained world, of course, stay healthy, and then you won't need
right.
the services. But if you do need assistance, then I think the alternatives are going to thrive because they're not going to be so affected by rising energy costs.
Yeah, and it comes back to this simpler life, because we've talked about riding a bike, walking instead of driving. That adds to your personal health. Seeking, and I'm not going to say alternative care, because I'm going to say natural care, and because normal care is cut it out, burn it out, drug it out. The medical treatment and the way they've taken over the healthcare system, which is more expensive because of the energy needs. I know in our office, we use subtle lighting. We don't use big overhead lights that are bright and glary and fluorescents, largely because some people are allergic to them. Our techniques are low energy, low tech, well received, well tolerated by the patients. And when we refer out, people need to be aware of, especially those that have been to the medical profession, where they've been to specialist after specialist after specialist, hospital after hospital, medical center after medical center, test after test after test. And every time they go, they're told, well, there's nothing wrong with you, or we can find nothing wrong with you. Well, that's because they're not a medical case. The medicine can do all the testing they want, but if they're not a medical case, it's not going to work. Then they go to a chiropractor, they go to an acupuncturist, they go to a traditional Chinese medical doctor. He asks a whole set of different questions. Nature responds with a whole set of different answers about this person, and all of a sudden, the treatment is a success. And they have spent, I've had patients come that have spent $40,000, $50,000 in medical tests to find there's nothing wrong with them, according to the medics. And the patient goes, well, how come I'm in pain? And they get a prescription for Xanax and a referral to a psychiatrist. I mean, that's kind of ludicrous. Then instead, they come to the chiropractor, we do our tests, we get our answers because we've asked different questions, and all of a sudden they start getting better because they were a chiropractic patient. And likewise, if we find somebody that's not responding as well as we'd like, we work in tandem with acupuncturists in our town. And sometimes we have to refer to the medical profession, usually not. And the alternatives for them work great. And that's why rest, exercise, good nutrition, positive mental attitude, spinal integrity, these are low-energy health producers because they make up the health balance in every human being. And the more we can embrace those things that build on our health, not necessarily just treat us after we're sick, the better off we're going to be as a human being. And so it seems that the environmental health theme that you've been talking about all day here in very eloquent terms seems to be appropriate. Now, I want to take a minute or two here to talk about your book. Now, Prelude, and I've read it, it's a great book. It's a novel, but it's a novel that seems to have a ton of facts in it. How did you decide to write that book?
Well, there were many, many books on our oil constraints, and there were nonfiction books, big, heavy policy tomes, and look, some people want to read that kind of thing, and I thought, well, how can I contribute to this discussion in a way that's going to reach a much broader audience? It's going to reach people who would never pick up a nonfiction book about oil or about energy. And so I'm being a writer. I said, I'll write a novel. And I had written a manuscript many years prior, which was sort of like a practice run, and gotten a lot of good feedback about that. And I thought, well, I'll try that again, and I'll make it a story about oil and the future of oil. And I decided to write a romantic thriller because I want to gain access to a much broader audience. And as it turns out, 80% of the fiction buyers in America are women. And so my protagonist is a female energy analyst based in Washington, D.C. And through her eyes, we see the world of oil and the world of energy. And we see a change in her, just as we see a change in the oil markets in the last 10 years, and the future of oil seems different to us now, despite what people are saying in the press about American energy independence, which I guarantee you isn't going to happen. It's a sort of PR ploy by the industry to get you to help relax all the environmental regulations so they can go drill anywhere they want. They're just as happy to sell that oil to Canada and to ship a lot of the refined product overseas, which is what they're doing. So it's not about energy independence, believe me. It's about making more money, which, you know, I understand they're in the business to make money, but don't tell us about energy independence when your real aim is to make more money. But
don't lie about it, yeah.
Yeah, just tell us, you know, we want to do this because we're a company and we think we should be able to make more money. Okay, fine, I understand that, and then we'll decide whether it's good public policy. But the book is set in 2008 against this oil price spike, and our protagonist is an analyst for a major energy consulting firm, and of course she buys into the whole idea that oil is just going to be abundant for many, many decades to come, and we don't need to worry about it until she meets a new friend, a musician named Victor. And he is somebody who says, wait a minute, our supplies are going to be constrained, and I don't know what you're talking about. You need to look into this some more. And she dismisses him. But then she discovers some documents, secret documents at her firm, which confirm what Victor is saying, that oil supplies may not be as ample as we're being led to believe. So, you know, then the firm realizes these documents have been breached, and they're trying to find out who breached them, and they're afraid they're going to come out in public. And we have this sort of cat and mouse game that takes place during the rest of the book. One of the things that I try to do in the book is take people to different places, key places, that are important in the world of oil. So we go to the Canadian tar sands, which we discussed at the outset of this interview, and also to Houston, which is really the energy city, still is the major energy city in the world. But most of it takes place in Washington, D.C., of course.
And
sort of center of power.
And it's an exciting book. It's very well written. A lot of cool things happen. And I could just see this as a major motion picture because it's timely, it's appropriate, and hopefully things will get moving on that, and we'll see Tom Cruise or somebody, and I don't know, who would make the good woman lead here?
Well, we've been thinking about that because there actually is a script, a film script of the book. Now, I didn't write it.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody else who read it, who's he's a former sound editor, Hollywood sound editor turned professor of cinema, read the book and said, I think this needs to be a movie, and he then subsequently wrote a script. We made an arrangement and been trying to market it.
Mm-hmm.
Had a couple of fairly major producers read it, and they liked it, but it wasn't something that they wanted to do. So we had high hopes, and now they've been deflated again. But it's a long process, and we're still looking for someone who might be interested in producing this. I think it's a compelling thriller, so I think we could get people to come and see it just on that basis, but it's also a very, very important message for people to get. We're not being told the truth about the future of energy.
Yeah, and that truth is the important part here. So who would you see as the movie actress that would play the part the best? Do you have an opinion on that?
Well, a lot of the actors that I know are a little too old for the parts. We need younger actors. Anne Hathaway for the lead.
Uh-huh.
And who am I thinking of?
Well, Amy Adams is a bright coming new actor. It's interesting. We should spend some time over a beer sometime talking about that.
Okay. As it turns out, when you sell a script to a production company, you have absolutely no say what happens after that.
Yeah.
it's all just talk on this end.
Yeah, well, that's what I figure. It's all just talk here, too. But as we're coming up here, what else do you think that people need to know? We got about 30 seconds here.
Well, when they hear people say that we have these ample new energy supplies, you will notice that they don't talk about the statistics or the trends over the last 10 or 15 years. And that's because those trends don't support what they're saying. Natural gas production in the United States has been flat since beginning of 2012, and yet we hear about this big boom. Oil supplies have been barely moving up in the last 7 years, and yet we have people saying there's a disconnect between what the industry and the politicians are saying to soothe your ears and what the facts are. So I would say get the facts, ask for the actual statistics, don't believe the big pronouncements.
Okay, here we go. So we got to close now. Thanks, Kurt. I appreciate your time. This is when I wish my show was 2 hours long. I'm so thankful you showed up to help us. Ladies and gentlemen, we got to sign off, so I'll sign off as we usually do. God bless you. Bye.
Hope you've enjoyed this week's edition of Speaking of Health. Please join Dr. Michael Cudlis again next Friday at 10 a.m. Pacific Time, 1 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. Have a heartfelt and healthy week.